Don't try this at home. I'm a trained professional. I got years and years of practice living this life I lead. Don't try this at home. I'm a trained professional. And I don't want no amateurs ending up like me. I don't want no amateurs ending up like me.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Homeowners Friend Podcast. I'm Steve, your host, and on today's show, we're going to try and answer the age-old question, and that is to bond or not to bond. In other words, what's the difference between ground and neutral? I've gotten so many questions on this. Why are they sometimes connected together? Why are they sometimes considered the same? And sometimes they're not connected together and they're not considered the same. And what's the deal with them? So we're going to try and explain that from a safety standpoint. And I think that'll be an interesting show for some folks that have questions on that subject. Before we do, though, real quick, our website, of course, is hofpodcast.com. And on that website, on the top, there's three buttons, the YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter button. If you hit those buttons, you'll be automatically directed over to our pages on those respective sites, and you can sign up to follow us there. Also, on the right-hand side there's a little box where you can enter in your email address. And by doing that, you will get updates via email at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Whatever a show was published between that 2 o'clock in the afternoon and the one previous, you get a little email automatically. That's all. You're not going to get any spam. It's not being sold to anybody or anything else. It's an automatic thing. I don't even do anything with it. You just put your email in, and it gets stored in the system, and then every day, you know, an email pops out if there's a new show. If there's no new show, you won't get anything. And I know it's important because I know a lot. I put out shows kind of infrequently sometimes and more frequently other times. There's no real regular rhyme or reason to when I put shows out. Some people, some podcasts come out every day or every Friday or whatever, but I just put them out when I can. I work, 10 hours a day most days, you know, between my commute and the work time. And then sometimes I have times when I have to stay late. And on those days, quite often it's a 14 or 15 hour day, so you know, it depends on what's going on with my work week, what's going on with family. You know, sometimes I can put a show out, sometimes I can't. It just depends. I have to research things too, and especially when I'm doing videos take a lot of time, so that's why things are kind of infrequent. So if you want to kind of keep abreast of new stuff on the show, sign up one of those three or four different ways, and that way you'll be informed. Okay, so let's get into the meat of the subject here. And that is what the difference is between the neutrals and the grounds. And in order to do this, I need to explain a little bit how the power gets from the pole in front of your house into your house. And this is going to be a little bit of a repeat for you, for those of you that have watched my video on how to install service entrance, which I just put out a little while ago, but just bear with me. Out at the street in front of your house, at the very top of the poles, are going to be some power lines going down the road at the very top. Those are the primary power lines. And they're running the power down the road to supply your home and all the other homes and businesses down the road from your location. Now, your home is not powered directly from those lines because those lines are in the thousands of volts. Those are the primary lines. Beneath those are going to be transformers every so many poles. And the transformers are going to be connected, of course, to the primary lines at the top. But they're also going to be connected to a set of secondary lines that run down the poles, just usually about the same height as a transformer or a little bit lower. And it is to those lines, those secondary lines, that our homes are actually connected. And the transformer's job is to take that very high voltage that's at the top of the pole and kick it down to a voltage that is used in our homes, which is typically 120 to 240 volts, give or take a few volts, depending on where you are. Now, a transformer is a device that has an input and an output, and the input and the output are actually connected inductively or magnetically, but not physically. They're actually separate. If you were to read with an ohm meter from the input to the output, you would read infinite. They're not electrically connected, but they're actually, what they actually are two coils of wire, and both of those coils of wire are wrapped around a common core, and the core is typically made out of steel or iron, and that core is something that can readily accept a magnetic field, a magnetic charge, so to speak. So the two coils, as I said, the input and the output coil, are both wrapped around this magnetic core. Now the input coil is connected to, one end of it's connected to that primary power line at the top of the pole, and the other end is connected to earth ground. So across that input coil is going to be the AC waveform that's going down the road. That's the primary AC waveform. Again, thousands of volts. And you remember, with an AC waveform, it's going to go positive to a peak, and then it's going to go back to zero, and then it's going to go negative to a peak, and it's going to go back to zero, and then back to a positive peak, and a negative peak, and a positive peak, and a negative peak, et cetera, et cetera. It's an AC waveform. As that voltage increases, decreases, and then flips polarity, and increases and decreases and flips polarity again, that voltage being applied to that input coil is going to create a magnetic field on that core that is directly related to that input voltage. So what do I mean by that? You remember back in junior high or high school that if you put a small electrical current through a coil of wire, that within that coil of wire will be developed a magnetic field. And you might have remembered doing that. You'd have a coil of wire and a battery and a switch or whatever, and you would have a magnetic compass somewhere near that coil. And when you hit the little switch to run the current through the coil, the compass would immediately swing. But depending on the polarity of the voltage applied to the coil, it's going to depend on the polarity of the magnetic field. And of course, being that this is an AC waveform, it's going to be a constantly oscillating field. It's going to be getting stronger and then weaker, and that's going to flip magnetic polarity, and then get stronger and weaker again and flip polarity and keep doing that 60 times a second, very, very fast. Now, remember that the transformer has two coils. There's an output coil as well, and that output coil is wrapped around that same core. Now, if you remember from, again, back in that same physics or science class, when you had a coil of wire and you hooked it up to a very sensitive voltmeter and you temporarily slipped a magnetic charge within that coil, that you would actually create a slight voltage on that coil, and the actual little voltmeter would jump a little bit as you slipped that magnet in and then pulled it back out again. And that's exactly how the transformer works. The output coil is wrapped around that same core that is now being constantly magnetized to a stronger extent and then weaker, and then it's flipping the magnetic poles, and then it's getting stronger and weaker again, right? It's following the AC waveform. So this constantly changing magnetic core field within the core is going to actually create a charge on the output coil, or the output of the transformer. And it is the number of coils, the number of turns in that coil on the input, compared to the number of coils on the output, turns of coil on the output, that is going to determine the voltage difference between the input and the output of that coil. And of course, the voltage could either be more on the output or less on the output, or it could possibly be the same voltage. And actually, if it's the same voltage, if the transformer is designed to put out the same voltage that it puts in, then it's not a step-down or a step-up transformer. It's actually an isolation transformer. And they are used in certain applications for safety and for other reasons, where you actually isolate the input to the output of some device for some reason. But that's not why you have them in front of your house. You have them in front of your house, of course, to be a step-down transformer, to be in a step-down mode, to take those thousands of volts at the top of the pole and run them down, take that voltage and step it down to what's being used in your home, the 120 or 240 volts. So those transformers on the pole in front of your house are going to have many more windings on the input coil than they're going to have windings on the output coil. And it depends on the voltages that are on the top, primary lines as far as what they're going to be. But they're probably going to be, maybe even like 100 to 1 or something like that. But whatever it is, there's going to be a difference. So the output of the transformer is going to be that same voltage that's used by your home, the 220 or 120 or 240 volts. So, the other thing that the power company does on these transformers in front of your house is on the output side of that coil, they actually have a third lead, which is called a center tap. And the center tap is physically connected to the center of that output coil. And this center tap, they actually run to ground. They actually run it right to ground. Now, I know if you're fast enough and you're thinking about this, you're like, if they take the center tap of the transformer, or really any part of that output transformer, and they ground it, isn't that going to cause a dead short? And if you really think about it, what is the output coil anyway? It's a piece of wire. So that piece of wire, you know, should be, I mean, if you have a piece of wire and you put a voltage across it, it's going to short out that voltage, no? I mean, it's a piece of wire, right? And if you put a piece of wire across a car battery, what happens? Either the wire turns red and blows up, or the battery blows up. You know, in either case, you've lost your sight and you've lost your battery and or your wire. Not something you want to do. So why do they go ahead and put a piece of wire across the power lines, you know, in front of your house, which is essentially what they're doing. But you have to remember that AC doesn't work the same as DC. When you have an AC waveform and you put it across the coil only draws current through it to build up that magnetic field. Once the magnetic field's built up, that field actually stops the current from flowing, believe it or not. It's hard to explain, but hold on. Sorry, there, I got a phone call. Where was I? Anyway, when you're looking at an AC signal across a coil, the coil has a particular resistance that it has, depending on a particular electrical resistance at a particular frequency of AC. Stuck in traffic here. Sorry, folks. When you have the AC signal put across the coil, it actually has a very high resistance at that design frequency. So it doesn't actually draw any current at all once that magnetic field is developed. Now, how the current actually flows through the transformer is the output coil actually tends to minimize or to take away the magnetic strength of that core. So in order for the magnetic strength to build up, more current needs to flow through the input to keep that magnetic field strong, to keep that voltage on the output. So you understand how the current flows? If the current's actually flowing through magnetism, it's really fascinating if you think about it, the way they work. It's this magnetic field, and you got one coil that's making the magnetic field, and the other coil is actually trying to break it down. And the more of the load you have on that output coil, the more it's trying to clamp down on or break down that magnetic field. It's kind of fascinating. But anyway, the output coil, as I said, the center tap is actually grounded. And it doesn't short out the transformer or anything because there's no current flowing out of the top or the bottom of that coil, the two output leads. Those two output leads, the top and the bottom of the coil, become the two power feeds that go into your house. And the center tap, which again is connected to neutral, connected to ground, excuse me, becomes the neutral that goes into your house. And if you walk outside and look at, if you have above ground power, and you look up above your meter socket where the above ground lines come over from the street, you're going to see that there's two insulated wires. And there's going to be a bare cable that they're wrapped around. This is typically how the overhead services are done. The two insulated cables are the two ends of that coil. They're your two power feeds. The uninsulated cable in the middle is actually the neutral slash ground slash center tap of that output transformer. Is it starting to make sense now? So in this case, that neutral is also ground, in fact. It's the neutral's grounded. So neutral is ground, and ground is neutral. It's the same thing coming from the pole. Okay, those three lines go into your home, through your meter and into your home, and they're connected up to your breaker box. The two positive leads, of course, are connected to the back plane where all your breakers snap in. And the neutral is connected to one of the buses in the electrical panel, and it's the bus where you connect up all the white cables from your 120 volt and 120 and 240 volt circuits for your home. And that, of course, is your neutral, your neutral line. So between that neutral line and either of the two power leads, you're going to read 120 volts. And from one end of that output transformer to the other end, across the whole transformer, you're going to read 240 volts. So, back in your house, across the two power leads, of course, you're going to read 240 volts. So that's how you get the 120 and 240 volts. Now, also, of course, in the breaker box is going to be a separate, usually a separate bus bar, a bar with a bunch of screws on it where you connect wires. And that one is going to be for connecting your grounds to it. And in a primary panel, you're going to be able to tell the two apart in one way. The neutral is going to have a big old lug at one end or the other where you connect that neutral cable from the street. And it's a big lug because it needs to be able to carry the current that is going to flow into your home from the street, all that neutral current. So it's going to be a pretty big piece of wire. And the ground bus bar is not going to have that huge wire lug because it's not actually carrying any current, hopefully. It's ground, right? It's there for safety. It's not a normal current carrying connection. So it doesn't need those huge connection that you would have coming from the street. And in fact, what you'll have is probably an 8 or 10 gauge, pretty hefty, but not nearly as hefty as a pretty hefty wire, but not nearly as hefty as the wires coming into your home, going outside and connected to a couple of ground rods. And those are going to connect into that bus bar really anywhere. I mean, you can connect them anywhere on that bus bar. Pretty much any of the connections, any of those holes can take your actual ground connection. And you'll notice when you look at the those two buses, the neutral and the ground, which again look the same except that one of them's going to have a large wire connection for the neutral and one of them's not, which is going to be your ground one. Those two in a primary panel, the main load center, the first panel box, those two are going to be bonded together. They're going to actually be physically connected together with, in a lot of cases, a big old metal bar. So you're like, well, why are they separate? Well, they're just separate to give you two places to connect. But in the main panel, they are essentially the same exact thing. They're both neutral and they're both ground. And the ground and neutral are the same thing. Now, when you get into a sub-panel, that is another electrical panel in your house that is not your main panel. It's another electrical panel that's run off your main panel. In those panels, the ground and the neutral have to be separated. And if you look at sub-panels, even, if you go to buy one, they will have instructions on how to bond or how to not bond. Because a sub-panel can also be a main panel if that's the way it's wired, if that's the way you have it set up. But if it's actually a sub-panel, whereas it's being powered by another breaker panel in your home, the main breaker panel, it is going to be, by default, a sub-panel. And in a sub-panel, you do not want the ground and the neutral bonded together. Now, why is that? Why are they the same in the main panel, but separated in the other panel? This is where we get into electrical safety. Okay, so let's look at a real-world example. Let's say you have a washing machine in a laundry room that is powered from a sub-panel. And let's say that sub-panel is not correctly wired up to code. And the person that put that in was cheap and just ran 3-conductor cable to it. So they had 2 conductors that they used for the 2 hot leads. It's a 220-volt sub-panel. So you got one for each leg. and that third cable they had connected to ground and neutral. It was their neutral, and they used it also as a ground, similar to what you would see in a main panel. And again, this sub panel had a washer, you know, washer and a dryer, laundry room connected to it. Now, let's say this sub panel was in the basement with the laundry room, or maybe out in a garage or someplace, and let's say it got moist, and let's say that the that neutral slash ground conductor that goes from that sub panel back to your main panel, let's just say that that conductor had a high resistance connection somewhere. In other words, it wasn't making good connection. So it wasn't conducting as it should back to the main panel. And let's say that you were in the laundry room doing a load of laundry. Now, the laundry machine has a three-prong plug on it, correct? It has two standard vertical plugs, vertical prongs, which are for the power in the neutral, correct? And then you have a third kind of a round-looking, semi-round-looking prong below those two, which is your ground. And those plug into a standard three-prong electrical outlet. Again, you got the hot, you got the neutral, the two vertical prongs, and then you've got that round one, which is your ground. In the washing machine itself, the two vertical ones are actually connected across the motor and the controls and you know, the other things that are in that machine that make it do its job. And the ground connection is typically connected to the case of the washing machine. Usually they're made of metal, so it's going to be the case and the lid that you open to put the clothes in, if it's like a top loader or the door for the front loader or whatever. You know, that ground is there to protect you. You know, obviously, you got something that has water in it. It could be in a wet environment. You know, washing machine, you could spill some water on the floor, whatever. It's a safety thing. You got the three-prong plug. So you go in there to do some laundry. You put the clothes in the machine, and you pull the thing, and it turned it on, okay. And nothing happens, and you're wondering what's going on. So you grab a hold of the machine, you shake it a little bit, you know what's going on here, and you get shocked, big time. You get belted, okay. Luckily, you don't get hurt. Why did you just get belted? Let me just explain to you what happened, okay? That one conductor going back to the main panel, which is your ground and your neutral, because remember, it's being shared illegally in this panel, the sub-panel, that ground and neutral have a bad electrical connection. But the hot leg for that particular circuit is still just fine. So the electricity is flowing into the machine, but because the neutral for that panel is no good, it can't flow. You know, I guess technically it's flowing from the machine back to the panel, but it's not going back to the sub-panel, but it's not going back to the main panel because that wire's broke or corroded or what have you. So the washer didn't start because there's no path for that electricity to get from that washer machine back through the sub-panel back to the main panel to complete the circuit to make the machine work. Then you go ahead and touch the washing machine. And just happens to be that the ground was a little damp there because, you know, you just brought some clothes out and they fell on the ground and got the ground a little bit wet or whatever. You spilled a little water, whatever the case may be. And you touched that machine and you got belted. What happened? Well, what happened is when you touched the machine, you were touching the outside of that machine, which is the case, which is connected to the ground plug on the plug that's plugged into the wall, correct? The ground terminal of that plug is connected to the case of the machine for electrical safety. And that ground is a great conductor, and it goes back to the panel, the sub-panel. Now remember, the sub-panel, the ground and the neutral are connected together in that sub-panel. They're bonded together, and then only one wire goes back to the main panel, which is not functioning correctly. So you went ahead and touched that machine, and because that third wire going back to the main panel isn't working, there's really no place for that electricity to go to continue its circuit, right? It's coming into the sub-panel, but it can't go back to the main panel because the negatives, the neutrals broke. So you go ahead and touch that machine. Your body, especially because I mentioned there was some wet water on the ground, your body touching that machine then provided a path for that electricity to go to ground via you. And why did it do that? Well, because you're touching the case of that machine. The case of that machine is grounded. The ground is wired back to that subpanel. The ground and the neutral are jumped in that subpanel, and there is no neutral going from that subpanel back to the main panel. So you are now essentially holding on to the neutral lead of that power cord. And you are becoming essentially the neutral conductor for that electricity to flow through to make that machine work. It's going in the machine in the positive side through one of the legs, and it's leaving the machine through you. And it hurts. Now, if the subpanel were wired correctly, and the ground and the neutral went back to the main panel on two separate conductors, then the neutral and the ground would not have been shorted together in that subpanel. Therefore, that negative or the neutral would not have been, even if it failed, it wouldn't be connected to the ground. They would be electrically isolated in the subpanel as they should be. So what would have happened then is the machine would not function. But when you touch the machine, you would still be connected. The machine would be connected to earth ground and completely isolated from the negative side of that electrical circuit. So you get the point. That's why they have to be separated in a subpanel. So you can see that having a common ground and neutral in a subpanel is a problem because it introduces ground loops where, you know, the ground is being used to as a return for the electrical feed, and that is just too unpredictable to have in your home. Screwy things can happen when you start sending power to ground on a regular basis. You know, it's one thing to rely on a ground for an emergency or a safety kind of situation, but you don't want to be using the ground as a current carrying device within the home. Absolutely not. Not something you want to do. Let's look at this one. The guy that installed the panel said, "Well, I'll be cute. I'll just put a separate ground rod in, and I'll ground that auxiliary panel. So it'll be safe then, right? Because it'll have a ground. I mean, if something goes wrong with the neutral wire, it's grounded, right? It's going to be safe at that point. I mean, it's not going to hurt anybody." Okay, let's say he hooked it up to a really, really good ground. Let's say he grounded it. Let's say he took a piece of copper wire, piece of 12-gauge copper wire or something, which is, you know, usually what you'd use for a ground, or even a piece of number 10. And let's say he connected that to the ground bus and connected it up to the cold water pipes running through the basement of the house. Let's say the main panel is also connected to that water pipe, which is very commonly done. I mean, that's kind of normal to do. If that water pipe goes out, through the city water street mains, that's a wonderful ground. One of the best grounds you can have, assuming you've jumped the meter as you're supposed to. We'll talk about that later. But anyway, let's just say you did that. So essentially that piece of copper pipe is now your neutral, now your ground wire going back to the main panel. That's a great, great ground conductor, right? Should be perfectly safe. Okay, so he hooks it up that way, and he has the three wires, the two hots and the neutral, and then he has this water pipe ground arrangement. Let's say it's 100-amp subpanel, whatever, 200-amp subpanel, you know, whatever you want to call it, 60-amp subpanel. And he puts in the proper size conductors to carry that current out to that subpanel. The hot and the neutral, the two hots, and the neutral are both, it's a 100-amp panel. Let's say they're number two copper, which is the proper size to carry that load. Let's say it is. I'm not even sure if it is. I think it is, but anyway, let's just say it is the right size to load. So he has that, and he hooks it all up, and everything's working great. And it's been working great for a couple of years. And then he's It's a hot summer day, and he's out in the garage, and he's doing some welding, and he's got the air conditioner on, he's got his radio on, and everything else, and he's sitting there welding away, and everything's working fine. And then all of a sudden, his wife comes out of the house into the garage and starts yelling at her husband that the house is on fire, and he's wondering, why is the house on fire? You know, he doesn't understand. So he goes and looks, and sure as shit, there's a fire in the basement. And it's, over by that sub panel, and it's burning. And he's like, what happened? So they call the fire department. He leaves, whatever. The fire department comes and puts the fire out. And can you figure out why this fire might have started? Well, he ran some nice heavy copper out to that sub panel to carry the electrical load that sub panel can supply, whatever it is, doesn't matter what it is. And instead of running a ground back like he's supposed to, he ran it, just hooked a piece of copper up to the water pipe, right? Just as a safety ground. And what happened is the neutral, as in our last example, the neutral failed. Got a high resistance connection and failed. And then the guy's out there welding, and he's pulling, 80, 100 amps, whatever. And the neutral's not working. But remember, he's got that great ground. And the ground and the neutral are tied together in the sub panel, and he's got it grounded to that water pipe. But what happened here? The ground wire from the panel to the water pipe, remember I said it's like a piece of 12 or a piece of 10 gauge wire, because it's only for electrical safety. It's not going to be carrying any current anyway, so why make it bigger? That's what he thought, so he hooked it up that way. When he lost his neutral, that ground all of a sudden became the only way for that power to get back to the main panel. So the 80 amps or 100 amps or whatever that air conditioner and that that welder were drawn were running entirely through that ground wire. The ground wire is not fused. You don't ground a fuse. You don't fuse a ground wire. All that current's running back through the ground wire, and the thing became essentially a light bulb. It turned red hot because of the excessive current, and of course the wire is running up through the basement up next to his wood studs, and the hot, red-hot wire started the studs on fire. Another reason why you never want to cheap out, always run separate neutrals and grounds and keep them separate, because the neutrals are going to be of the proper carrying capacity for the load. The grounds, however, are not necessarily going to be big enough. Nor do they have to be. So that's another reason why you never want to combine the two. Keep them separate. Okay, so I think it makes sense that you can't have a shared neutral and ground in a subpanel. Okay, we understand why that is the case. I've explained that pretty clearly. Ground loops are never a good thing. They can electrocute you. You could send too much current down a conductor that's not designed for that current, and other problems as well, mainly safety issues can happen with that kind of a situation. But why doesn't the exact same thing happen when you're talking about the primary breaker box in the home? How come they can be together, shorted out together, in common in that box when they can't be, for obvious reasons, in a subpanel? Let me try and explain. The main breaker box is where the power in your home starts from. It's where it emanates. It is the first point of distribution, and that's very important to understand. Going into that panel, the neutral slash ground from the street are tied together, as I explained, in many places. At the transformer, the center tap is tied to ground. The you know, at every house, the secondary feed, center tap or neutral line is grounded. At every pole, it's grounded. It's grounded at every house. Every main breaker box has it grounded and connected together. The ground and that neutral are tied together and grounded. So at the point where it enters into the house, the neutral and the ground truly are the same thing. Neutral's ground, ground is neutral. It's the same thing. So in your panel, they are, in your main panel, they are the same thing. However, from that main panel out into your home, with all your circuits, they're not the same thing. They have a completely separate use at that point. Coming into your home, it's just for providing power to your home. So you have a neutral, which is also ground, and the two hots. That's fine. But when you're going from your panel out into your circuits, you want to have the two power feeds, or you need a power feed and a neutral to run the circuit, but you also want to have a ground that's separate. And we explained why you want that to be separate on your circuits. You always want the ground and the neutral to be separate on all the circuits in your home. A subpanel is really nothing but another circuit. It's another glorified circuit. It's got it's fed from the main panel via a set of wires, just like any other circuit in your home is. That subpanel is nothing more electrically than having an extension cord coming out of your main panel connected to a multiple outlet strip. It's nothing more than that. And except that you would have be kind of a funky extension cord because you have both legs, right? You have 220 volts and you'd actually have two multiple outlet strips, but you get my point. It's connected off that main panel and you're forking out to some more circuits, but it's still a load, a common load off that main panel. And that is why it has to remain separate. All the circuits off that main panel, for safety's sake, have to remain separate. The ground and the neutral have to be separated for electrical safety. Now, some appliances, certainly most handheld appliances these days, may only have two prongs on them. Two-prong plug. They don't even use a ground. So what's the big deal? Well, those particular appliances are double insulated appliances. In other words, there's no way that an electrical failure within that appliance can electrocute you. It's the way they're made, the way they're electrically insulated between the user and the internal functioning devices. There's no way that you can get shorted, that you can come in contact with that hot lead or even that neutral lead. You just can't do it with any single failure. Multiple things would have to fail for you to have that happen. So they don't need a ground, but any appliance that does need a ground has to have it and has to have it functioning, and it has to be separate from the neutral. And that's, again, as I explained, it's a safety thing. So whether you have a washing machine plugged into an outlet that's connected to the primary box, the primary circuit breaker box, the neutral and the ground have to be separated as they travel into that primary box. Within that box, they're connected. We understand that. But the wires going out have to be, in fact, separate. Or if you have that washing machine plugged into a sub-panel, the sub-panel, again, has to keep them separate and keep them separate all the way back to the main panel. Again, the sub-panel is nothing but a glorified multiple outlet strip. So, okay, hopefully that answered that question. In the next show, I'm going to answer two more questions, which should be equally as interesting as this show. The first question I'm going to answer is, what happens if between your main breaker box in the street, what happens if that neutral fails? Now, you may think to yourself, well, that neutral is the same as ground. You still have a ground. Nothing will happen. Well, I'm going to tell you a lot of things happen. It can be pretty exciting. So I'll talk about that in the next show. And the other thing I'm going to talk about, and I'll give you this as a little quiz, and we'll see if somebody can answer it. And if you're an electrician, please don't answer it. But if one of my amateurs that are listening in here can figure this out, drop me an email and let me know what it is. And I'll try and, I don't know. Well, I can't really give you a prize. I'm sure I'll get a bunch of people that'll answer this question. But, you know, at least you'll know you're brilliant. Coming into the house, you have three conductors. And the three conductors are typically the same size. Your hot, your two hots, and your neutral. They're going to be the same size conductors. How can that be when you have two hot legs? Let's say you have a 200-amp service. You have two hot legs, which are, let's say, double-aught cables. And those double-aught cables are designed to carry 200 amps each, right? And on both of those legs. And they do that just fine, and they don't overheat, and they work just fine. How can the neutral cable still be a 2-watt cable when it's providing the neutral return for two separate 200-amp service circuits, right? Because you've got, if you're looking at the 110-volt side, you can have a maximum of 200 amps flowing through both of those legs to neutral. So essentially, if you're looking at it from 110-volt standpoint, 120-volt standpoint, you can have 400 amps at 120 volts flowing into a 200-amp breaker box, right? You got two 200-amp legs. If they're both maxed out, that's 400 amps of 120-volt power, or 200 amps of 220-volt power. How can all that flow back on one common cable that's not twice as big as the other two? How can that be? So try and think about that one before the next show. How come the common cable, your neutral cable, is the same size as the two other legs when it acts as the common for both of those legs, and both of them can carry 200 amps each? How come that cable's the same size, even though it's actually being neutral for 400 amps worth of possible loads? Think about that. And we'll answer those questions in the next edition of the Homeowner's Friend Podcast.
Don't try this at home. I'm a trained professional. Living this life I lead, don't try this at home. I'm a trained professional, and I don't want no amateurs ending up like me. I don't want no amateurs ending up like me.
The Homeowner's Friend theme song, Trained Professionals by Billy Bourbon, is available on musicalley.com. Check them out.